Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Our government.
Bailout.
Your government.
Energy resources.
Healthcare.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Global financial recession.
The work that needs to be done.
As the week begins, we want to set your agenda, and I'm here with Andrea Bernstein in the studio, and to talk about the events in the coming week, both in Washington and around the world, our good friend Marcus Mabry, international business editor of the New York Times, is here in the studio. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And in an interest of symmetry and dealing with our other partners across the pond there, the BBC diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus is with us from London. Glad to have you back with us, Jonathan.
Hi, John. Good morning.
Marcus, let me begin with you. Pelosi versus the CIA. We've heard from Nancy Pelosi charging that the CIA lied to her on these CIA briefings. Today, we hear from potentially Leon Panetta on the subject. Explain.
Well, we can expect this, you know, she said, they said, to continue this week. With poor Leon Panetta, really, you know, the director of the Central Intelligence, caught in the middle, he really has not. He's back to his agency. He's tried not to call Nancy Pelosi a liar per se, but with her calling the CIA liars, he kind of doesn't have much of a choice. And it looked like initially a few weeks ago when this first came up that maybe she'd be able to say, as she tried to say initially, well, you know, they told me this might happen, but they didn't tell me these enhanced interrogation techniques, quote unquote, were actually going on. And they said that's not true.
Well, here's Nancy Pelosi speaking last week.
They mislead us all the time. I was fighting the war in Iraq at that point, too, you know, saying to my members, the intelligence does not support the imminent threat that they are conceding. But what's the point? Yeah, they did. They misrepresented every step of the way.
Even though she sounds rattled, she's very clear. Does Leon Panetta, when he delivers his first public speech today, have to address this?
He doesn't have to in the speech. It's actually depending on what kind of media follow-up there'll be. If there's Q&A, then he will have no choice but to address it because the media will make him. But it's interesting. The irony of this, of course, is the fact this week we'll see Nancy Pelosi staying on the hot seat, even though, of course, you know, she was not running the government.
Right, exactly. The policy issue that really comes to the fore early on this week is a proposal in Washington that will actually get debated on how to regulate the derivatives market, given that we've spent much of the last year talking about how it's impossible to even price these things. How can you come up with a regime to regulate them?
Well, this is key, John. This is incredibly important. It'll be interesting to watch this week. What we want to watch on the agenda this week is what comes out of the two different congressional committees that would have oversight. There's a debate over whether or not this would be the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, or whether this would be the SEC. They'll be regulating this. But the two-page letter that Secretary Geithner sent last week up to the Hill says that the administration wants to be able to regulate and to make sure these things are traded publicly and transparently, which did not happen before. And we're talking about, you know, more than half – well, we're talking more than $600 trillion worth of derivatives that were floating around a year ago, all privately placed with no one knowing where they were or what they're based upon. That is what led to the financial crisis last year that led to the economic crisis that we are still enduring.
So speaking of financial crises, President Obama has yet another wish this week. Is he going to get it?
Now, you should not have to worry that when you sign up for a credit card, you're signing away all your rights. You shouldn't need a magnifying glass or a law degree to read the fine print that sometimes don't even appear to be written in English or Spanish.
Going to get his wish?
Yes, he will get his wish. There's no question about it. When the House version of the credit card regulations legislation was voted on, even Republicans voted for it. It's something that's overwhelmingly positive up on the Hill. It's going to be interesting to see the Senate version comes up for vote tomorrow, probably. How many Republicans will back it? It's a little different from the House version, but both of them kind of take down these kind of onerous, some would say despicable charges that can be.
Some say it every month when they open their bill. Yeah,
absolutely.
This is a real sea change. I mean, for a decade, more than a decade, the financial industry resisted regulation on credit cards and derivatives, and now poof. It's going to turn around.
What a difference a financial crisis will make.
No kidding.
Yeah, but the credit card thing, I mean, everybody sees it as the banks are getting a big break, so why am I not?
Well, it's ironic, though, because this could end up – this could be an unforeseen reality of this. Since the banks will no longer be able to do lots of kind of predatory lending that they do to people under 21, for instance, and the people who actually have revolving balances who don't pay off all their cards. Those of us who pay off our cards every cycle could now see our set fees, things like the annual fee, rocket up,
yeah.
And things like like points and benefits disappear completely.
So we'll get slapped for being good.
Absolutely.
Well, on the international agenda, Benjamin Netanyahu is set to visit Barack Obama in Washington today to discuss the Middle East and to discuss his own sort of questionable leadership in Israel. Jonathan Marcus, Netanyahu's first meeting with Barack Obama, is he on the defensive or is this someone with a message to send, do you think?
Well, both sides have been sending lots of strong signals in advance of this meeting. I think it's very clear the Americans, this is an administration that is preparing to set out a comprehensive peace plan for the region. It's going to continue strongly backing Israel's security and the existence of a Jewish state, but it also is going to expect Israel to do its part in furthering a peace agreement. Now, the crucial thing there is, of course, a two-state solution, which President Obama has made explicitly clear is something that is in America's national interests. That's not quite the way Mr. Netanyahu sees it. As yet, he hasn't been willing to say that magic phrase, a two-state solution. He's no doubt going to be wanting to stall. A lot of people have talked about a train wreck in Israel-U.S. relations, and that's not going to happen at this meeting. I think they're going to be smiles all round. It's very much a preliminary session, but I think both men will go away with a much clearer understanding of where the other is coming from.
But Jonathan, there is a collision course here. It seems that the momentum in both the Washington and around the world is to move quickly to final status issues in talking about the Middle East. And I don't know if Netanyahu is capable of delivering that. What do you think?
Well, we don't know that. What's clear is that Mr. Netanyahu has been flexible in the past when he's had to be. It's interesting that opinion polls in Israel, even amongst Likud supporters, the conservative supporters of the Prime Minister, suggest that good relations with the United States are paramount in their minds. Israel, of course, has another major problem on its hands, the perceived threat from Iran's nuclear program. And if things go badly there, it's going to need the Americans firmly in Israel's corner. So good relations with Washington are essential. It's clear that many in Israel, whatever their political views, do believe that ultimately a two-state solution is the only answer to the problems of the region. Now, whether President Obama's bold and audacious attempt at the outset of his presidency to try and get this peace show back on the road is going to succeed, who knows? But I think it's going to be very difficult for the Israelis if they very quickly and very early are seen to be principal obstacles to that path.
Jonathan, speaking of relationships with Washington, Russia and the U.S. are beginning talks today in Moscow about replacing a treaty on curbing nuclear arms, which expires in December. We've got the START Treaty Redux back up there with ketchup as a vegetable, taxi driver, a bit of a blast from the past. What can we expect?
It is kind of a blast from the past in a way. I mean, it's like back to the old days of the Cold War, the two apparent superpowers sitting down at the nuclear negotiating table talking about arms cuts. I think clearly both sides, Moscow and in Washington, want to improve ties between them. We've heard a lot of talk from the Americans of pressing the restart button and so on. Now, there are lots of very, very difficult and contentious issues between them, and I'm not sure it's all going to be sweet and light. But paradoxically, one of the easier issues to deal with is this question of nuclear arms. This is how things have changed since the Cold War, when this was clearly one of the most difficult issues on the table. Both sides, for different reasons, want a new arms control agreement. The Russians, because it emphasizes their role as a sort of key interlocutor with the Americans. They sit side by side. Everybody else is excluded. That's good for the Russians' self-image. Also, if they can cut their nuclear arsenal, that will save them some money. For Mr. Obama, there are huge benefits in a new arms deal, not least that he is eager to burnish America's non-proliferation credentials. He's very eager to bolster and buttress the international non-proliferation machinery. And one way of doing that is to convince other countries around the world that America is indeed serious about reducing its own nuclear stockpile.
So, well, as long as they're hitting the restart button rather than any of those other buttons there in the nuclear stockpile. Quickly, before we go, the Iranian election campaign officially begins. Jonathan, quickly, and I want to get a comment from Marcus. It's beginning on a warm note with the release of Roxana Saberi, the journalist.
Well, indeed, although perhaps if they hadn't locked her up in the first place, that would have been an even warmer note. It's crucially interesting, of course, because we have this initiative by the Obama administration, reach out to the Iranians. It's not clear very much is going to happen until after this election. So being watched in Washington carefully and indeed around the world.
Marcus Mabry, take us out.
It's going to be interesting to see if it's a fair and free election. That's going to be the most interesting thing about it.
And Marcus Mabry, international business editor for The New York Times. We'll see if there's a challenger for Ahmadinejad, that's for sure. And Jonathan Marcus, diplomatic correspondent for our partners, the BBC. Thanks to both of you. The agenda, there it is.
Thank you.